Right, well, we start today a new series of 12 sermons on the book of Daniel. And I'd like to give, you've already had lots of things waved at you, I want to wave one other thing at you. This book called The Lord is King, it's written by Ronald Wallace, and it's a book on Daniel. And I was studying it, or some of it, this summer when we were in Ireland, and I thoroughly recommend it. And I hope that as you come week by week to this series, you might be able to follow it by reading The Lord is King. You might even find one or two things in the sermons that come from it. Right, now just four quick introductory points before we get started on Daniel. Okay, four things very quickly as an introduction. The first one is this. I'm not going to deal with the question of authorship in this sermon. And if you want to read about the debate about whether Daniel actually wrote Daniel, you can read about it in pages 13 to 28 in this book next week. But let me just say to you that I am somebody who does believe that Daniel was written by Daniel in the 6th century BC. I don't believe that it was a tract written in Maccabean times in the 2nd century BC, though I was taught that at university. So that's the first thing. And if you want to acquaint yourself with the arguments, the thing to do is to read that book. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this. That Daniel, assuming that it was written in the 6th century, was written at a time when the Jews had been carried off by the Babylonian army under their king, Nebuchadnezzar, in the year 605 BC. Now, there were three deportations. There was one in 605 BC, which is referred to here in Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And we know that that was the year 605 BC. There was another deportation in 597 BC, and then there was a final deportation when Jerusalem was completely destroyed in the year 586-587 BC. So those three deportations. And it seems likely that Daniel would have been carried off in the first deportation, the one in 605 BC. So that's my second point. The Jews were in exile in Babylon. Now my third point is this, that we need to remember as we read the book of Daniel that the experience of the exile would have been a shattering one for the Jews. Because the Jews never imagined that God would ever allow Jerusalem to fall. They never believed that he would allow the temple to be destroyed. And so if you look at verse 2 of chapter 1, where we read that the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, that's Nebuchadnezzar's hand, with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, the very idea that some of the vessels which had been used in the temple would have been carried, that they'd been carried off by a pagan king and then used in that pagan king's temple, that very idea would have shocked many of the Jews. Because after all, hadn't God promised them that one day a Messiah would come, a second king, and he would rule from Jerusalem? And hadn't he promised them too that Jerusalem would be the future religious center of the world? So the Jews would have been in a state of great shock and amazement. It would have seemed to many of them that God had forgotten them, that he'd left them. And the fourth point I want to make is that verse 3 finds Daniel in Babylon along with many other Jews. He was then in the largest city in the world. It was big, it was powerful, it was impressive. And Jerusalem, which was God's city, many miles away, lay in ruins. And the theme of this first chapter, which we're going to look at this morning, is how Daniel was tempted in this new situation in Babylon to compromise his faith. And I just want to say by introduction that I believe that the book of Daniel has particular reference to us, because our situation in England and in London in particular is very similar to the situation that Daniel was in. The church, I mean, you wouldn't believe it looking around here this morning, but the church in London is small and it's struggling. If you're a student, you're probably in a Christian union, and the Christian unions are small for the most part and they're struggling. And we in London are surrounded by an alien culture, just as Daniel was. And many of us will be tempted to compromise our faith in the same way that Daniel was tempted to compromise his. So there, that's my introduction. Right, now 3 points. Always have 3 points. Now here's the first one. The first one was, how was Daniel tempted to compromise his faith? Now two things stand out. First of all, can you look at verse 5? We read this. The king assigned them a daily portion of the rich food which the king ate, and of the wine which he drank. Now the first way in which Daniel was tempted to compromise his faith was over the little things. He was offered the opportunity of eating from the king's table and of drinking the king's wine, which would have been the best wine in the world, or the then known world. Now there were certain foods that the Babylonians ate, such as pigs and hares and certain types of fish, that were unclean to the Jew. You can read about that in Leviticus chapter 11, verses 1 to 47. And if Daniel ate the king's food and drank the king's wine, he would in fact be breaking the law of Moses as given in the book of Leviticus. And in that way, he would have defiled himself. Now not only did the Mosaic law prohibit the eating of certain types of food, but it also stated that the blood had to be drained away from the flesh. You can read about that in Leviticus chapter 3. And if you were a Jew and you ate the blood of an animal, then you defiled yourself. And much of the meat that the Babylonians ate did not have the blood drained out of it. So the temptation would have come to Daniel very strongly, but it would have come like this. Many of his friends would have said to him, what difference? What difference is it going to make, Daniel, what you eat and what you drink? Or I can imagine somebody saying to him, why bother to be so particular, Daniel? Why put people's backs up, particularly the king's, and make yourself out to be so odd and so different? So the first thing he was tempted to do was to compromise over the little things. And the second thing is, look at verse 4. We're told that they were youths without blemish, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to serve in the king's palace. The second temptation that Daniel faced was to get on in Babylonian society. Notice that phrase, competent to serve in the king's palace. Now Daniel and others had been picked to become statesmen. And if you think about it, they had a great career mapped out for them as future frontline diplomats for King Nebuchadnezzar. Times were moving quickly and you needed to move with the times, particularly if you were a Jew and you were going to get on. So to eat the king's meat and to drink his wine seemed, on the face of it, the way to get on in Babylon. If you really wanted to carve out a number for yourself and really do well in the diplomatic corps, then you needed to eat the king's meat and drink his wine. And many people would have whispered to Daniel, surely if you begin by objecting to what the king offers you from his table, you'll never get on at court. Or I can imagine somebody else saying to Daniel, Daniel, your religion, you're taking your religion far too seriously. Now let me apply this to us, first of all. Two principles emerge for me. The first principle is the principle of involvement without compromise. Because Daniel didn't say no to Babylonian society. He said yes to the challenges that were offered to him. He accepted a place in this new Hebrew university that Nebuchadnezzar had begun. He even allowed his name to be changed. He didn't object. And I want to say right from the start that we as Christians must not avoid involvement in society. We must stick in society and take full opportunity, take the opportunities that we get given, and accept the challenges that we have before us. He didn't pull out, which is what many of the Jews did in Babylon. They formed their own groups and they refused to have anything to do with Babylonian society. And the second thing that strikes me from this is the principle of obedience in small things. Because though Daniel was involved, and he was involved to the hilt, he didn't compromise his faith. Now it's very, very easy for us as Christians, if you're if you're like me, it's very easy to cut the corners on little things. For example, standards of personal honesty in the office. Or even taking things from the office. Well, everybody takes the biro, or everybody helps themselves to the stationery. Or time off. It's very, very easy to compromise ourselves on many issues, and particularly on the little issues, to cut the corners. Now I want to ask you, I can't apply that to every one of you, but I want to ask you, is God speaking to you about some area of compromise in your own life? And as I say that to you, I know that there are a couple of areas where he's been speaking to me, and I've got to get them sorted out. So that's the first thing, the temptation to compromise his faith. Now secondly, how did Daniel resist the temptation to compromise? Well, five things strike me. First of all, from verse 8, we read this: "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's rich food." Now, the first thing that Daniel did, so that he wouldn't compromise his faith, was he resolved in his heart. He knew what was right to do, and he settled it, first of all, in his heart. He didn't even go and ask Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego first, but he made up his own mind. Now that's very, very important, because if you and I are going to overcome temptation, we must first make up our minds. If God tells me that something is wrong, then I must resolve in my heart to obey him. Then I can ask for his grace and strength to follow it through. Now this is very important. I was talking to somebody on last Monday actually, and there's a verse in the Bible which says when you come to Jesus Christ, one of the things that you should do is you should confess it openly. It's a verse in Romans chapter 10. And I said to this person, she wanted to come to Christ, she wanted to believe in Jesus Christ. I said to her after we'd prayed together, I said, now you must go and tell somebody. She looked at me and she was very nervous. And she said, I thought you were going to ask me to do that. And I said, it doesn't matter who it is, but you must resolve in your heart to be obedient to God's word on this. And if you and I are going to follow God, we must resolve, first of all, to obey him in our hearts. Now secondly, the second thing that strikes me is in verse 9. We read, "And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs." The second thing about Daniel in the way that he resisted the temptation to compromise was that his life was consistent. God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. Now I think this is very important. because Daniel was helped in carrying out his resolution not to eat the king's food or to drink his wine by his own personal character. That's why God gave him favour in the eyes of the prince. Now this has an important lesson for us too. It's absolutely no use digging our heels in over something if our lives are unkind and ungenerous and unlovable. That was the trouble with the Pharisees. They were rigid in their obedience to God's law, but they had no love. And do you know, it's possible to be firm about something. In fact, it's possible to be so firm that we can become obstinate about it. Or it's possible to be so determined that we become a bigot. And if you and I are going to resist the temptation to compromise, it's vitally important that when we dig our heels in over something and we say, I'm not going to do that, God's will does not allow me to do that, that our characters back up what we do. Do you know, one of the things that I think hinders our witness more than anything else is that when we refuse to compromise, so often our characters don't back up what we're doing. So people just think, oh, well, being a Christian means you've got to be crabby or unloving. And it's so important that we balance grace and truth. Otherwise, we bring great disservice to the gospel. Now, the third thing that I noticed about Daniel was that his protest to the prince, to Ashpenaz, was very courteous. Look at verse 8. Therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. So though he'd resolved in his heart, he was very courteous in his manner. And he went to the prince and he said, explained to the prince that if he ate this food and he drank this wine, he would defile himself. Now there are many ways of resisting. There are many ways of resisting compromise. But we can do it sometimes in a heavy-handed and an ugly way. Or we can do it gently. And this is important when it's over a matter of compromise, that we're courteous and gentle as well as firm. And then the fourth thing that I noticed from verse 12 is that it involved him in self-denial. Because he said to the prince, test your servants for 10 days, let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Now I should think Daniel and his friends enjoyed luxuries as much as any of us do. But to make the issue clear, he said to the prince, let us have nothing to eat but pulses, lentils, beans and peas. And for drink, let's have nothing to drink but water. And I found myself that if you're going to live for God and you're not going to compromise your faith, it inevitably involves you in some kind of self-denial. And the fifth thing that I noticed was that his faith was tested. Verse 12, test your servants for 10 days. Now Daniel showed his faith when he said to the prince, test your servants for 10 days. In other words, put us to the test. See what we're like after 10 days. Now we must be willing as Christians to be tried and tested. James chapter 1 verse 2 says, count it all joy, my brethren, when you meet various trials, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Now one of the ways that God tests us is to allow us to be tried. Do you know when a goldsmith is trying to purify a lump of gold, what he does is he puts the flame onto the lump of gold, and as the flame is directed onto the lump of gold, the impurities in the gold come to the surface, and he skims them off with a knife. And he knows when the gold has been fully purified, because eventually a point comes when there are no more impurities left, and he can suddenly see himself in the gold. Now our faith, the Bible says, is more precious than gold. And God will test you and test you and test you again so that he can purify that faith. So how did Daniel resist the temptation to compromise? And how must we? Well, first of all, he resolved in his heart. And we must resolve in our hearts to obey God. And then secondly, he was consistent in the life that he lived. And we must be consistent in the life that we lead. And then thirdly, he was courteous. And we need to be courteous too when we're challenged over an issue of our faith. Then fourthly, he denied himself. And we need to deny ourselves if we're going to resist temptation. And then fifthly, he was tested. And we too will be tested by God. Now thirdly and finally, I want to finish up with two reflections on Daniel from chapter 1. Because there are two things that have really struck me as I've studied this chapter. And the first one is this. It's the long-term usefulness of Daniel to God. Look with me at verse 21. We read this. And Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. Now, I don't think that Daniel would ever have imagined that what on the face of it seemed a very small thing, namely not eating the king's meat and drinking the king's wine, would have had such long-term consequences. And I don't believe myself that if Daniel and his friends had not been prepared at that point, which we read in chapter 1, to say no, on that point then, and by saying no, they put their lives at risk, they would not have been able to say no later on when the temptations and the trials got much, much greater. Because if you remember, and we'll be thinking of this in the future sermons, Daniel had to say no again to King Nebuchadnezzar over the issue of bowing down to the image. That's in chapter 3. And then, do you know what they faced? They faced the possibility of being thrown into a burning fiery furnace. Or again in chapter 6, when Daniel was threatened with the lion's den if he carried on praying to his God. Now the point I want to make is this, that resistance began quietly over a comparatively small thing, food and wine. But later on it led to much more dramatic defiances. It began with a quiet interview with the chief of the eunuchs in his office. And just like any of the great men of faith in the Bible, you'll find that often the first decision that they made was a very small decision. For example, Abraham's decision to leave his hometown, or Moses at the burning bush. What was on the face of it a very small decision to begin with was later to have a very powerful effect, both in Abraham's life and in Moses' life and in Daniel's life. And surely the reason Daniel was able to be used by God so much was because he was obedient and loyal to God on just a small issue initially. And do you know, when it says that Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus, do you know that was for 44 years? Now let me say something to those of you here who are young, like me. There will be many little decisions that you will make, which right now you will not think are very important. Little ways in which God will test you as to whether you're prepared to put him first. And I want to say to you, particularly if you're young, if you'll obey God now, within 10 years from now, because I was 10 years ago, I was down there listening, within 10 years, you don't know what God will be asking you to do in the future. And you ask any Christian that. First of all, will you obey God on the small things? Because if you obey God on the small things, he'll be able to trust you with the bigger things later on. Now that's the first thing. And secondly, the second thing that strikes me about Daniel is that Daniel's great strength as a person, and it comes through this chapter, lay in his devotional life. Because there were few young men in Babylon at the time who got thoroughly involved in Babylonian life, but also remained true to God. Daniel was one of them. And I believe that Daniel got his strength primarily from the fact that there was a group of them, Daniel, Meshach,
at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
In other words, he drew on the fact that he was part of a small group, a cell, and it was the cell which gave him the power and the moral strength to resist temptation when it came. But not only did he get great strength from his friends, but he also had an intensely real personal prayer life. And you can read about that in Daniel 6, Daniel 9, and Daniel 10. And the impression I get, as I've been reading the book of Daniel, is that Daniel had a very disciplined life with the Lord. A very disciplined, devotional, and moral life which was based on the law of God. And you find again and again, as you read through Daniel, that he studied the law of God, he meditated on it, by himself or with a small group. And as a result of that, because of that commitment, then he was able to stand firm when the tests came. But it required discipline. Now I want to say in conclusion that you and I, as Christians in central London, will only avoid compromise if we have a strong devotional life. I really believe that the clue to obeying God and overcoming temptation is a strong devotional life based in prayer and the study of the Scriptures. And the secret needs to be in small groups, studying together. But it also needs to be based in a strong personal prayer life. And I want to finish up in the last minute with a quick story about a friend of my wife's sister's just been out in India. And she was working up near the Himalayas, and there was a woman there, one of the teachers, who regularly used to pray through the night. And when Lulu asked her about it, the thing that she said was, she said, you can't get to that sort of state of praying through the night straight away. But she'd begun, when she was young, in her mid-20s, to develop her prayer life with God. And because of that, she'd grown into a woman of prayer. And I want to challenge you and I, this year, to really spend time on our walk, our personal walk with God. Let's close with prayer. Father, thank you for Daniel's strength, and thank you that he resisted the temptation to compromise. And we pray for one another that you will help us to be the same. In your name. Amen.